Now, it wasn't until the late 1800s that clocks began appearing in public places, and with that became an increased appreciation of time and its constraints upon us. Now, also, of course, how would we carry timepieces with us? Alexis McCrossan is a professor of history at Southern Methodist University in Dallas and the author of Marking Modern Times, A History of Clocks, Watches and Other Timekeepers in American Life. Alexis, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, or good morning from Texas.
When the first public clocks first appeared, Alexis, how would they make sure they all were showing the same time?
Well, it was impossible to make sure they were showing the same time. There was no way to convey the notion of the same time. So they set each clock to the local time using a sundial and some other astronomical instruments and hoped for the best. It was only with the telegraph that they were able then to try to coordinate clocks, but that was still an imperfect kind of mechanism. And it's really not until the 20th century that clocks could be coordinated in the way that we expect them to be.
So in the late 1800s then, were they seen as more a bit of a novelty rather than a tool for people?
Well, there were a little bit of both. If you can think back to when cell phones were first starting to kind of become popular, but calls were constantly being dropped and networks didn't extend very far, but yet we still liked the idea of our cell phones, and we still kind of hung in there with them. And that sense, that's the way these public clocks were. They weren't just a novelty. People really wanted to know the time and use the time and coordinate themselves and maximize their time. But the mechanisms only went so far. So one had to have various kinds of checks, if you will. You knew that the clock on the St. Anne's was always 30 minutes slow, but you knew that if you could hear the bells of another church, that those were always accurate. And so people sort of developed a kind of geography of time in their own heads and figuring out what was the right time. Mm. Of course, the right time is just a social convention. If you and I were to agree right now that it was 7 o'clock at night, if you and I agreed on that between ourselves, it could be 7 o'clock at night.
No, it's indeed.
Just, it's whatever we choose it to be.
And I suppose when public clocks first came in, the sort of constraints we have, the time systems we have in operation now, didn't operate. You'd have different times in different parts of relatively small areas.
Oh, absolutely. And there are these terrific stories and here in the States about a small community having the town clock and the church clock, and there being adherents of town time and adherents of church time and great disagreements about which was the true time.
Mm. Now, when people started wearing wristwatches, was that regarded as more of a fashion development rather than anything else?
Oh, completely. It was, I mean, the first people who wore wristwatches were soldiers in the Anglo-Boer War and then in World War I. And they sort of jerry-rigged pocket watches and strapped them to their wrists. But then shortly thereafter, wristwatches were a kind of, absolutely a fashion item, a novelty. Anybody who was really serious about keeping the time had a pocket watch. And the wristwatches were more for display.
Right. Was it felt that wristwatches weren't accurate?
Right, exactly. That they weren't really necessarily reliable timekeepers in the way that a pocket watch could be.
Right. Was there any basis to that?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. My sense of things is that it is likely that initially those, not the wristwatches that the soldiers were wearing, because as I said, those were pocket watches that were jerry-rigged right onto wrists. But I suspect that the wristwatches, being so very, very small, were probably not as reliable or accurate at first. Now, by the end of the 1920s, there were precision wristwatches available as well. And certainly during World War, there was no watch production during World War II, but immediately thereafter, those wristwatches that were produced and that saturated the market, those would have been very accurate.
Mm.
But there's always a period of development, right, with any kind of new mechanism figuring or innovation in a mechanism figuring out how to make it work.
The fact that wristwatches were being used by soldiers, did that make it acceptable as something for a man to wear? Because it seemed as if, certainly among civilian society, it was seen as just something for women, initially at least.
Exactly. And they called them, initially, they were considered to be bracelets, right? And that was the language that was used. They called them watch bracelets, and then the watch manufacturers realized, oh, if we want a large market for these, we've got to figure out a better name for them. So wristwatch. And then they used the kind of military martial associations that watches had gained in these various kinds of wars in order to get that kind of masculine feel for them, so that... But even today, right, a man's watch often is much larger than a woman's watch, so as to kind of establish its masculinity, right, its virility right. of this mechanism. And the interesting thing is that with the pocket watches, for women, the pocket watches were smaller than for men.
Did they?
Even the pockets might have been the same size.
Because you will see this a lot, that even today, that man's wristwatches have lots of little dials on them, as if telling the time for a man is far more complicated than it is for a woman, just in case they need to dive to 5,000 fathoms below the sea. Was it like that then?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly the same thing. it's sort of funny, because if you think about it, I've thought that our cell phones are a lot like watches, but of course they perform all these other functions.
Mm.
But we don't have special cell phones sized for women. We don't have a female-sized cell phone, but we have a female-sized watch.
Yeah. Was there any, at least initially, was there any resistance to the introduction of the wristwatch?
Oh, yeah. There was mocking tones of these ridiculous novelties that would pass away immediately, and who would want to carry the time on their wrist? And absolutely, the resistance wasn't at the ground level. If one didn't want a wristwatch, one just didn't have to buy one. But there was in the press a kind of skepticism.
Mm. And what was that skepticism based on?
I think it was based on what you and I have just been talking about, those notions of what was masculine versus what was feminine. And women wore things on their adorned their bodies with things, and men didn't, or did so in a slyer kind of way, right? Mm. I mean, men certainly are interested in adornment, and the pocket watch was a tremendous status item. I mean, it's not just a pocket watch, but there's a chain, and the chain has to visibly show, and the fancier and heftier and the more valuable the metal in the chain, the more status. But I think I think the resistance was largely around this notion of appropriate adornment for men and women.
Mm. Within homes, then, having a domestic clock, was that attached to notions of status?
Oh, absolutely. So by the end of the 19th century, nearly everybody, even the most poorly paid worker, would have had a clock in their home. Maybe not the best running clock, but some sort of clock. But if the higher your status, then the mantel clock right above your fireplace, the grandfather's clock, or what was called the tall case clock, those were very important. And that they ran well was also a sign of a well-functioning household. And it would be very embarrassing if the clock in your entryway showed the wrong time.
Right, okay, that would be a very important thing. But would the size of your clock and you know, how many chimes it made, those kind of things, would they seem to be important?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Complete signs of status.
Alexis, thanks very much for speaking with us today. Alexis is the author of Marking Modern Times, A History of Clocks, Watches, and Other Timekeepers in American Life. We're going to take a break after that. Some good.